Well, I had a thought to ponder this, and first barrel's actually in red.
Quite the best way to do it, I think.
I'll close the door.
Can't you blow them all to kingdom come?
Charrington,
close the door, Charrington. Can't you see we're gentlemen? Good evening.
I've come to give each one of you an invitation to my wedding.
Your wedding?
Your wedding?
You don't mean it.
My wedding.
Well, who's the happy pair? When's it to be?
I'm sorry to deprive you fellows of your only joke, but Miss Foster and I are to be married in September.
Mary Foster?
You asked her to marry you a year ago before you went up to Oxford. She laughed at you.
Right, she laughed at you.
You asked her again when you came home and she still laughed.
Man, you can't be serious.
Unrequited love turned him mad. Mad.
I'm neither mad nor mazed, my dear James. She's consented to be my bride.
Lend me a pistol, someone, on a first-class fare to the other end of nowhere. Charrington's bewitched the only pretty girl in our 20-mile
range. I agree.
Was it mesmerism or a love potion, Jack?
Neither, sir. But a gift you'll never have.
Oh?
Perseverance. And the best luck a man has ever had in this world.
I still refuse.
You asked her three times in all. She laughed every time.
The third time, she said it was becoming a confirmed bad habit and laughed fit to kill us.
Oh, the belle of our village coterie. Gone, lost forever to this monster.
True. You're a blighter, Charrington. We're all in love with May Foster. Well, tell me a man who isn't.
So, soon now you'll be in love with my wife.
Everybody's in love with her. It's a fashion like Inverness Cape.
I've lost my bet, I can tell you that. £5 that May Foster won't be married this side of the 20th century.
But when you congratulate May, don't seem so incredulous. She'll think she's getting a devil of a poor man if you make my worth so negligible.
That is just what we'll strive to do, Charrington.
It was true. There wasn't a man in Barkham that wasn't in love with May Foster. Oh, I remember her so well. The picture of her is imprinted on my mind. I had asked her twice myself. She laughed, of course. She always laughed. As if the whole idea of matrimony was the funniest joke in the world. I have to confess that we all secretly believed that Charrington had used something other than persuasion with her. The queer thing about it was that when we congratulated Miss Foster, she blushed and smiled and dimpled for all the world as though she were in love with the man. As if she'd been in love with him all the time. By my word, I think she had been. Women are strange, impossible creatures. We were all asked to the wedding. September the 19th, 1893. The date is engraven upon my mind. My sisters were, I believe, more interested in the trousseau than the bride. And I was to be best man. The coming marriage was much canvassed at afternoon tea tables and at our little club near the Saddler's. The question was asked all the time. Does she care for him? No one could believe it, you see. She had, for a long time, made her position clear about marriage. I've never known a woman be so amused at the idea. After a certain evening in August, I never questioned her love for him again, though. It was not my intention to eavesdrop on them. I was coming home from the club through the churchyard.
I cannot believe it, even now. I'm so terribly happy. Sometimes I think I could die from sheer happiness.
May. May, my dearest love. Do you remember? It seems years ago now. I was about to go up to Oxford.
May was sitting on a low, flat gravestone, her face turned towards the full splendor of the western sun. Her expression ended once and for all any doubt I may have had about her feelings for him. Her face was transfigured to a beauty I should not have believed possible, even to that lovely little face.
My dear, I believe I should come back from the dead, if you wanted me.
I hurried away, The evening was clouding over. We did have a storm that night. But I was fully enlightened once and for all as regards John Charrington and his bride-to-be. The wedding was to be on September the 19th. 2 days before, I had to run up to town on business. The train was late, of course. The Southeastern always was. I stood grumbling on the platform, I remember, my watch in my hand, when I saw Charrington and May Foster. They were walking up and down the unfrequented end of the platform, arm in arm, looking into each other's eyes, careless of the sympathetic interest of the porters. Actually, I must confess, it sickened me a little. Love's all right, but...
James! Hello, old man!
Hello, John. Miss Foster?
Good afternoon, Mr. Andover.
Ah, still mister. There was a time when... No matter. John, where are you off to?
To old Branbridge's.
I wish you wouldn't go, John. I feel certain something will happen.
Do you think I should let anything happen to me in the day after tomorrow, our wedding day?
Don't go, please.
I must, nay. Well, your boy's been awfully good to me. He's dying. I must see him. Well, don't worry, I shall be home in time.
You're sure to come?
Nothing shall keep me. I shall be back tomorrow, or if not on the day after, in heaps of time. Nothing on earth shall keep me. Although I turned my head away, for I was not a little embarrassed by all this, I could not help noticing that May Foster's eyes were red-rimmed. I had never known her to cry before. Certainly her entreaty to Charrington would have sent me and my Gladstone bag out of the station and back to the village, no matter what I felt I owed old Branbridge, whoever he might have been. But the train came in, and Charrington and I shared a smoker quite pleasantly, and later I said goodbye to him, and that was that. A bit of our train conversation, though. And suppose Mr. Branbridge dies?
Alive or dead, I mean to be married on Thursday. I have a copy of the Times. Care to read it?
When I got home the next afternoon, a very wet one, by the way, my sister greeted me with...
Where is Mr. Charrington?
Goodness knows.
I thought you might have heard from him, as you ought to give him away tomorrow.
Isn't he back?
No, James, he is not back. He has not returned. And what is more, you may depend upon it, he won't. You mark my words. There'll be no wedding tomorrow.
Nothing shall keep me. I shall be back tomorrow, or if not the day after, in heaps of time.
Oh, rain, rain, rain.
Good for the farmers.
I have a strange feeling, James.
You were always one for prophecies, Fanny.
Mark my words, sir. Tomorrow there'll be no wedding here. Tomorrow.
Fanny, you have a power of annoying me which no other human being has ever possessed. Mark my words. You had better give up making such a thundering idiot of yourself. There'll be more wedding tomorrow than ever you'll take the first part in. I shall go and see if he's returned.
Oh, I could snarl confidently at my sister. But I didn't feel so comfortable when, late that night, I, standing on the doorstep of John Charrington's house, heard that he had not returned. Next morning brought a brilliant blue sky, gold sun, and all such softness of air and beauty of cloud as go to make up a perfect day. I woke with a vague feeling of having gone to bed anxious, and of being rather averse to facing that anxiety in the light of full wakefulness.
Come in, Fanny.
No shaving water, James.
Ah, beautiful day.
There's a note for you, too.
A note? Not...
Yes.
Oh, thank heaven. I really began to believe your gloomy fears yesterday.
I knew by the writing. I'll put the water here, James. Don't let it cool. Well, what did he say? All's well?
Yes, I'm to meet him at the station at 3 and come straight on to the church. You see, Fanny, dear sister?
Well, praise be that I was wrong. I cannot help what I fear, though.
I must go and tell May.
He must have written to her as well, but I'd better go and make sure she's not anxious.
Miss Foster! May!
She was in the garden. I saw her blue gown through the hollyhocks as the lodge gates swung to behind me.
He's written to you too?
Yes. I have to meet him at the station, 3 o'clock, and then we're to come straight on to the church.
Branbridge begged him to stay another night. Had not the heart to refuse. But I wish he hadn't stayed.
Please don't fret, Miss Foster. Today there's to be a beautiful wedding. Congratulations. And all my heart's wishes for a wonderful life. I must go now. I was at the station at 2:30. I felt rather annoyed with John. It seemed a sort of slight to the beautiful girl who loved him that he should come, as it were, out of breath and with the dust of travel upon him to take her hand, which I, for one, would have given the best years of my life to have taken.
Is John Charrington on the train? Anybody seen John Charrington? John Charrington.
I was more than annoyed. I was furious with him. There was no other train for 35 minutes. I calculated that with much hurry we might just get to the church in time for the ceremony. But, oh, what a fool to miss that first train, the 3 o'clock. What other man could have done it? That 35 minutes seemed a year as I wandered round the station, reading the advertisements and the timetables, the company's bylaws, getting more and more angry with John Charrington, Esquire. The confidence in his own power of getting everything he wanted the minute he wanted it was leading him too far. I always hated waiting. I believe everybody does. But I hated it more than anyone else. The 3:35 was late. Of course, he wasn't on it. Five minutes after the departure of the 3:35, I flung myself into the carriage I had brought for John.
Drive to the church. Mr. Charrington hasn't come by this train.
Anxiety now replaced anger. What had become of the man? Could he have been taken suddenly ill? I'd never known him to have a day's illness in his life. I decided that some terrible accident had befallen him, and it was my duty to tell the bride. It was 4:05 as we drew up at the churchyard. A double row of eager onlookers lined the path from lych gate to porch. Our gardener stood near the church door.
Are they waiting still, Biles?
Waiting, sir? Oh, no, no, sir. Well, it must be over by now.
Over? Then Mr. Charrington's come.
To the minute, sir. Must have missed you somehow. Sir, I never seen Mr. John the least bit so before. In my opinion, he's been drinking pretty free. His clothes is all dusty and his face like a sheet. I tell you, I didn't like the look of him at all. And the folks inside, they're saying all sorts of things. You see, something's gone very wrong with Mr. John, sir. And he's tried liquor. He went into the church with his eyes staring straight in front of him. And we never heard from none of us. Him was always such a gentleman, sir. Here they come, sir.
They were coming up.
Hello.
Biles was right. John Charrington did not look himself. There was dust on his coat. His hair was disarranged. He seemed to have been in some row, for there was a black mark above his eyebrow. He was deathly pale. But his pallor was not greater than that of the bride, who might have been carved in ivory. Dress, veil, orange blossoms, face and all. The ringers stopped ringing the gay wedding peal, and as if in some awful jest, they started to toll the passing bell. And then the six ringers fled like rabbits, away, away. The bride shuddered and grey shadows came about her mouth, but the groom led her on down the path where the people stood with handfuls of rice, but the rice was never thrown. And then, in a hush like the hush in the chamber of death, the bridal pair got into their carriage and the carriage started on its way.
If I'd seen his condition, sir, I'd have stretched him out on the floor of the church. By heaven, I would. Before I'd have let him marry my daughter. Come with me, James. We will drive like the blazes and get on to the, before the coach. I have some explanation for this. Coachman, take us home and drive like the devil.
We passed the bride's carriage. I did not look at it, but old Foster, her father, did, and he cursed. We reached home before it. We were at the house for more than a minute before the bridal carriage rolled in.
Explanation I'm demanding.
Please, Mr. Foster, just
merciful heavens! The carriage is empty.
Empty? But
May! She's fainted. She's May! May! Help me, for heaven's sake, help me, James!
There was no sign of John Charrington. May, his wife, was crumpled on the floor. We carried her into the house. The coachman swore that he drove straight from the church, and no one got out of the coach. Yet Charrington and his bride had got into the coach. In the house, we drew back May's veil, and I saw her face. White. White, and drawn with agony and terror. And her hair. Her radiant blonde hair was white. Like snow. As we stood with the horror and inexplicability of the affair all around us, there came a telegram. I tore open the orange envelope.
Mr. Charrington was thrown from the dog cart on his way to the station at 1:30. Killed on the spot.
And he was married to Mae Foster in our parish church at 3:30. I saw him myself.
I shall be married. Dead. Or alive.
What had passed in that carriage on the homeward drive? No one knows. No one will ever know. Oh, May. Oh, my dear. Before a week was over, they laid her beside her husband in our little churchyard on the thyme-covered hill. The churchyard where they had kept their love trysts. Thus was accomplished John Charrington's wedding.
Beyond Midnight is presented every Friday night at 9:30 by Biotex, the new soak and pre-wash powder. The program is adapted for broadcasting and produced by Michael McCabe.